the beginning of the of what the so-called Ten Commandments. Now, let me clarify why I say the so-called Ten Commandments. It's something which I think it's worthwhile. I've been repeating it very often because it's so misleading. The statement, the name of what we call in Hebrew Aseret HaDibrot, to call them the Ten Commandments, is something that was created. I mean, it's not only in English, by the way. In all languages which I know, right, it all has the same meaning. It's as if you would call them in Hebrew Aseret HaMitzvot. That's what it means, commandments. It's all a plot in order to take away the importance of everything else which God said. That is the idea of the Ten Commandments. So much so that we find in our sources that there was such a plot. I'm just going to prove to you there was such a plot. In earlier days, even in the Talmudic period, it was normal for a Jew at the end of the morning prayer to say the Ten Commandments. Why not? It's so important, right? It's the basis for everything. As a matter of fact, according to our tradition, the so-called Ten Commandments include everything. Even though they are only ten statements, we know that each one of those statements includes dozens and dozens of other mitzvot and other ideas. And altogether, if we would be able to derive from the ten statements everything which it contains, we can see all the 613 commandments. As a matter of fact, one of the very, very early authorities, right, one of the Gaonim, I think they quote Rav Sadia Gaon, one of the famous Gaonim, the heads of the Babylonian Academy, he made up the list of the 613 commandments which are derived from the ten statements. Right? So they are extremely important. Nobody doubts their importance. It's not by chance that God chose these ten statements as the first statements for the Jews to hear. And all the other statements of the Torah were just given to the Jews subsequently, only afterwards. Right? So it must be important. But it came a point that some people started saying that's the only important thing. And everything else is absolutely secondary. So it's not so important if you put on the phylacteries or not, because after all, they are not part of the Ten Commandments. So if they are not part of the Ten Commandments, then it's not really a commandment. So what is it? Well, if you want to do it, it's nice. Right? So therefore, the rabbi said, you know what? Just in order to maintain the right balance, let's stop saying the Ten Commandments every morning. Now, you will find in some Sidurim, some prayer books, that you still have the Ten Commandments right after Shacharis, right? Because it's still a copy of that original version, the original custom. But the rabbis are against it. They don't want you to say the Ten Commandments every morning in order not to distort the scale of values. So you see that there was such a plot. So I have no doubt about it that the statement, the translation of Aseret HaDibrot as the Ten Commandments is part of that plot. And really, you know, I transgress, you know, the same way. I also call it the Ten Commandments. And I know every time I say it, it hurts me, because I know I'm adding, like I'm continuing this plot against the importance of the rest of the Torah. Calling it the Ten Commandments, right, denies the importance of the 613 commandments. We have no Ten Commandments. We have 613 commandments. What do we have? Ten statements. That's what we have, not Ten Commandments. Right? So just that people should have the right concept concerning the so-called, and at least let's add this, the so-called Ten Commandments. Yeah.
I don't know if it's every shul.
So of course there's nothing wrong with a shul having the so-called Ten Commandments on top, because that's what they are, the basis for all the other laws. That is a fact. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? It is the most important part. But that does not mean that there is no value to everything else. Everything else is contained in the ten statements. Okay, so we would be much more faithful to its real meaning in Hebrew if we would keep, if we could call it the Ten Statements, not the Ten Commandments. Okay, I can't change the world, you know, and I can't start preaching to everyone. No, don't say Ten Commandments because it's wrong. Because it adds, continues. It's a continuation of the plot. But you should know it that it is a plot. It was a plot. Today we don't mean anything wrong with it, but we should know the sources, the roots of the statements, the Ten Commandments. Okay, so those are ten statements.
But yeah, most of them are not that they have Ten Commandments. Most of them are commandments.
Well, not really. If you pay attention to the second one, as a matter of fact, you will see that there are four commandments. It's one statement, but there are four commandments. Don't bow down to an idol. Don't worship an idol. Don't keep an idol. Don't make an idol. I mean, there are four commandments. And in the count of 613 commandments, the second statement contains four commandments. Right? So you see that it's not... As a matter of fact, the first statement, there is a big argument whether it's a commandment or not. And this is what I want to speak about. Take a look at the first statement. Dibrot, Vaidaber. Vaidaber Elohim. And Hashem spoke to the Jewish people, that spoke et kol advarim ha'ele lemor. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Now, before we start Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I have to tell you an interpretation of the word lemor. Do you know what it always means, the word lemor? One of the most common words in the whole of the Torah. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe lemor. Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. You know what the word lemor is? I wonder how it's translated in English in general, lemor. You know, in verse number one. What?
It says saying.
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 So what does it say? So what does it mean?
To say.
So what does it mean? And God said to save. You're right. Saying. So what does it mean? What does it add to the statement in itself? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe lemor.
You already said it.
So what is the lemor?
To say
to someone else. Exactly. Which means that whatever Hashem says to Moshe, he doesn't mean it for Moshe to know it. He means it to Moshe, for Moshe to give it over. Okay? Therefore, why would God say the Ten Commandments, so-called, right? Vaydaber Elohim et kol advarim ha'ele. Who is he speaking to?
Moshe.
To Moshe and?
Indirectly to the people.
Well, the first two commandments he's saying to everybody. Lay more? What does it mean, lay more?
To teach to our children.
Oh, so that's the point. So here, one of the great, great commentaries, Meshech Chokmah, he says, this lemor is the basis of our belief. Because you know that famous idea, which is already expressed by many, many of our great thinkers, that what is our certainty of Mount Sinai, that this actually happened? What is our certainty? Remember, this is the most important experience in Jewish history, what we are reading right now. The Sinai experience. There is nothing more important. What is our certainty that the event happened? Eidus. Testimony. Why? Because our parents told us that it happened. And their parents told them that it happened. And so on and so forth, one generation after another, right? Until Mount Sinai. Because if this is not a fact, then it's a plot, right? Somebody made it up. At which point of the chain did somebody make up a story, right? Remember, at some point of the chain, between Sinai and now, right, somebody must have made up their minds that they are going to fool a whole generation of Jews that their ancestors were in Mount Sinai, right? This is a pretty difficult job, to convince a whole generation who never heard from their parents that their parents were in Sinai, right? That's what's happening. That their parents really were in Sinai. And you bring them a book, which says it. Atem, you saw, here it says in the book, there was a Sinai experience. And you expect people to believe it. And no one, right, asked, how come my father never told me about that? And he, my neighbor, also didn't ask, how come his father didn't tell it? Right? Is that reasonable? Well, that is very unreasonable. So if that is unreasonable, what is the only other possibility? That is true, that it happened. There is no other possibility. As difficult as the possibility that it happened is, and it is difficult, because how can you conceptualize a prophecy of millions of people? I mean, it's a pretty difficult thing. How can you even think about a few million people having a prophetic experience, God speaking to them? It's difficult. But the alternative is impossible. So when you have these possibilities, one is very difficult and the other one is impossible, obviously you're going to go into accept the thing that is very difficult. Unless you accept the theory of the first fool, which means the first foolish generation that naively accepted without question a book which tells them that their parents were in Sinai without ever hearing from their parents that there is such a thing and without ever seeing the book before, right? In other words, the lemor, the chain between parents and children, is the guarantee of the reliability of the event. Okay, this is how this commentary, the Meshech Chochmo, understands the word lemor. It's the key to the feeling of certainty the Jews have that the event actually happened. Okay, now, just as an aside, you know that people say, well, what about other religions? They also claim certain experiences like Sinai. People who have studied comparative religions say that this is not true. They studied other religions, and there is no religion in the world who claims anything even close to what we claim. Our claim is so outrageous that either it's absolutely true or it's absolutely absurd. Right? It's one of the two. It's nothing in the middle. All the other religions claim a certain experience, a certain vision, a certain prophecy by one person. That's all. Not even two. We claim 3 million. Yeah, not we claim 5, 10 people. No. 3 million. Yeah. So the difference is so great because one person can make a mistake. We all know that one person can make a mistake. How can you base a whole religion, a whole way of life on one person? And that is the fact by every other religion. I'm not trying to put down anybody. I'm just telling you, when you compare the basis for our religion and the basis for all others, I mean, it's not even a comparison. Right? So therefore, the lemor, again, just to stress the importance of the lemor, this word lemor is the basis for our feeling of certainty. It must have happened because the alternative is absolutely impossible. Okay, this is the pshat of the Meshech Chochmo concerning the word lemor. Let's go on now again. Anochi Hashem Elokecho, I am God your God, God. Asher hotzeiticha me'eretz Mitzrayim mi'beit avadim. I'm God your God who took you out of Egypt. According to our tradition, this is the end of statement number one, right? Of the so-called first commandment. You may see other versions, Gentiles have other versions. This is our version. The first so-called commandment ends right here, okay? I am God your God who took you out of Egypt. Says the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra was one of the classical commentaries on the Torah. He says, I was asked by a great rabbi, why does the first commandment start with the statement, I am God your God who took you out of Egypt? Wouldn't God pride himself of something which is even greater than taking out the Jews from Egypt? What would that be? Creating the world, right? I'm the creator. Gracious. So why doesn't he say, I'm God, your God, who has created everything? Right? And the answer is obvious. Why? Because it's not only that we believe that God is the God of nature. Sure, we believe God is the God of nature. But our God is the God of history, which means God who cares about human beings and cares about their developments. What establishes for us that relationship? Our being taken out of Egypt as a nation. Right? So this is our own personal Jewish experience. In other words, the fact that God created the world can be a basis for 613 commandments. It can be a basis for 7 commandments. In other words, if God created the world and we are part of this world, we are obligated to keep the world going, right? We have to be decent human beings. But to be a decent human being, you don't need the 613 commandments. All you need is seven commandments. So what is the special relationship that God has with the Jews? When did that start? Not in the creation of the world. That is not the God-Jew relationship. It's the God-human being relationship. But it's not the God-Jew relationship. When does the God-Jew relationship start? When God took us out of Egypt. This is why the 10 sayings, the basis of the 613 commandments, has to be the Exodus. Okay? Now, pay attention to the statement in itself. I am God, your God, who took you out of Egypt. Is there any hint here of anything we must yes do or not do? In other words, what I'm asking is, do you hear the difference between this statement as opposed to the second commandment, so-called? Second statement. Lo yeh lecha Elohim acherim al panai. Let there not be other gods. Third statement. Don't use God's name in vain. Fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath. What do you hear? Do you hear the imperative in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? Lo tir, do not commit murder. Do not do this. Do this. Don't do this. The only one that doesn't fit is the first one. So it's not surprising at all that one of our great, great authorities, when he was making up a list of the 613 commandments, because you may, I don't know if you know this, you know that even though we know that we have a tradition that there are 613 commandments, we don't actually have from the Talmudic period or earlier, a list of the 613 commandments. It is strange. We all talk about 613 commandments. And for thousands of years, there was no list that we know of 613 commandments. Right? Sure, of course, it's mentioned in the Talmud. Taryag mitzvot nitno le Moshe Mitzinai. Right? For instance, they say, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. What is the numerical value of the word Torah? What? 611. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe Torah 611 commandments. Oh, two they heard themselves. They heard, I am God, don't have other gods from God. So altogether, 611 Moshe Torah, two God Torahs, altogether 613. By the way, this gamatria, this basing your decision on your statement on numerical value, that's mentioned in the Talmud. That's a statement in the Talmud, right? So we know there are 613, but we don't know which are the 613 commandments. So when people, after the Talmudic period, started making lists, enormous problems were created. There are many things that we just don't know. Do we count putting on the hands phylacteries and the head phylacteries as two mitzvot or one? If you count it as two and somebody else will count it as one, you have to find another mitzvah somewhere else. So there are all kinds of differences. Nowadays, we accept mostly the list of Maimonides. Maimonides made a list of 613 commandments, so even though there are people who argue in certain specific places, but more or less, they accept the list of Maimonides. But before Maimonides, there were other great authorities that made up their own list. And it's interesting. This earlier authority, he wrote a book called Baal Halachot Gdolot. The book is called Halachot Gdolot. The Great Laws, the Book of the Great Laws, whatever it means. He says that believing in God is not one of the 613 commandments. Isn't that strange? Believing in God is not one of the 613 commandments, right? And you can hear it from the statement, right? I am God, your God, who took you out of Egypt. It doesn't say, believe that I am God, your God, who took you out of Egypt. It's not a commandment. It's a pure statement. It has no commandment in it. The rationale behind it is, of course, what? It's implicit. You're right. It's implicit. In other words, you can't say a commandment without accepting a commander. You can't be commanded to accept a commander. You can only be commanded if you already have accepted the commander. You hear, it's very subtle, this idea. In other words, you can accept the command of a commander once you have accepted that he's a commander. But what is going to make you accept him as a commander? Fine, but in other words, you're saying it's implicit in the commandment that there has to be a commander. So there is an implicit acceptance of the commander. But can that be a commandment? It has to be an a priori acceptance. It's a given, exactly. Do you hear the point? Therefore, can you count it as one of the 613 commandments? Says the Baal HaChodesh, no. Now, Maimonides argues, because Maimonides says that after all, since there are certain ways to fulfill the mitzvah, it's not just the belief which is important, it's how you express the belief. For instance, when you say every day, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, what are you fulfilling? The belief that there is one God, right? So therefore, since it is a specific form of fulfillment, you can count it as a mitzvah. Because what the mitzvah is, says Maimonides, is that belief in God, which is a given, express it in certain ways. Do you understand what I mean? Which means you could count it as a mitzvah, but you realize that what is the point of the argument between Maimonides and that earlier authority, the Baal Halachot Dolot, whether you do count the belief in God as a mitzvah or you don't count the belief in God as a mitzvah. I just want to point out that even according to Maimonides, again, it's not the belief itself which is an obligation. It's how to express that belief, because the belief in itself can't be an obligation, right? It has to be something which is accepted before you accept the concept of obligations, okay? So it's very strange here. You have 10 dibrot, right, 10 statements, and the first one is not really a commandment. It's strange, isn't it? But that fits perfectly with something else. You know that in the commentaries, we find a reason why there are 10 and not 9 and not 11. You can say, well, because it just came out. Right? Came out to 10? No, it can't be. Because by us, numbers are crucial. Somehow there is a meaning to the number in itself. You can't ever say, according to our tradition, well, God finished the whole creation in 6 days, therefore the world was created in 6 days. No. Somehow 6 is part of the plan, or 7 is part of the plan, right? And that's a fact according to us. Somehow 7 is the creation in itself. In other words, whenever you are going to find ever again something which has to do with a cycle of nature, you'll always find the number 7 attached to it. Always. Right? If you have the sabbatical year, also a cycle of 7. You know, when a person loses a close relative, he has to mourn 7 days, as if to say it's part of nature. It's part of the cycle of nature, 7. Okay? What is the meaning of the number 10? Now, I mentioned to you the Midrash, which says God created the world with 10 statements. Right? This is what it says. 10 statements. We said, Vayomer Hashem Yehi Or, and God said, let there be light. And God said, let there be this. And God said, let there be something else. The Talmud says that there are 10 statements which created the world. Okay? The interesting part is that people who counted the statements, and that's in the Talmud. In the Talmud, somebody sat down and counted the statements. He only found 9. Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer Hashem. So he asked the question, but there are 9 statements in Genesis concerning the creation of the world, right? Let there be light, let there be life, let there be a human being. Answers the Talmud, you are right. Direct statements where it says Vayomer Hashem, there are really 9. But there is a statement which precedes all statements. Breshit bara Elokim et ha-shamay v'et ha-aretz, etc., etc. And then it says Vayomer Hashem Yor. In other words, in the beginning God created everything, and God said, let there be light. implies a statement, because the beginning is also a statement. You hear what the Talmud says? Which means that the beginning, which is the basis of everything, you can't call it a statement, but it is a statement. Why? Because that is the basis of all statements. You hear this idea? You hear the parallel here? The 10 so-called commandments are 10, but they are not really 10. They are 9, and the first one is the thing that precedes all other ones. In the beginning, God created everything. The beginning of the basis for everything. The existence of God is the beginning of everything. You follow what I'm saying? Which means that is the parallel between what the Talmud says, Bereshit nami ma'amarhu. Bereshit, in the beginning, that also is a statement, even though we don't see it as a statement because it's too subtle for us. It's beyond all statements. It's the basis for all statements. The belief in God is also the basis for all statements. So it is a statement, but it's not a statement like all others. It's the one that precedes all the 9. Okay? Now, let me just explain to you the meaning of the number 10. Okay? Yeah, you wanted to comment, sir?
Is this that in the beginning God created, you're given that God created a beginning. Exactly.
You remember, we believe that the beginning is created by God. God is not as old as the world. God created the beginning. Exactly.
So that's parallel with the
existence of God. Right. That's the idea.
There's no corresponding statement to that, like the others.
There is no Vayomer Hashem. It doesn't say, and God said. Because in God said, that's already too close to us. That is too far away. It's too far, it's too thin, it's too abstract to grasp it. So therefore, it doesn't say Vayomer Hashem Bereshit Bara Elokim, let there be the world, because it's so far from us. It's so impossible to conceptualize what was before that. What do you mean God said, let there be a beginning? In order to say, and God said, let there be a beginning, you have to be able to conceptualize the pre-beginning, which in our minds is impossible. Therefore, he can't say, and God said, let there be a beginning. Therefore, God's existence also, it's not commanded, because there can't be anything besides God. That's the absolute beginning. Okay?
There's no more material at that point.
Right. There's nothing else. And what is the meaning of the number 10? So the Maharal of Prague says, you know what the meaning of the number 10 is wherever it appears. 10 is always, I'll tell you the word and I'll tell you the explanation, the unit of parts. That is what 10 is, the unit of parts. What does it mean? 1 is a unit. 2 is not a unit anymore. 3 is not a unit. 9 is not a unit. 10 is a unit. But you see it as parts. But if you would look beyond the parts, you would see the basic unity of those parts. That's what 10 represents. Right? This is why 9 Jews are 9 Jews, but 10 Jews are a community. Right? They can pray together because they are a community. 9 Jews are 9 Jews, individuals. 10 is already the unity beyond the parts. You hear this idea? That's the same way. God created one world with one purpose, with one basic law, but we don't see it. We see parts. We see 10. But our obligation is to see the one beyond the 10. That's our obligation, to see the unity behind everything, to see how everything fits in. Not that there is this law and this law, and this happens in China, and this happens in Israel. No, everything is happening for the same purpose, because there is a basic unity in the whole world. We must search for the one beyond the 10. The same way with the 10 commandments, so-called. Right? Why? Because it's all one. It's the will of God. That is what we are obligated to do, to fulfill the will of God. But the will of God breaks up into little parts. This commandment, this commandment, this commandment. Our obligation is not to get lost in the mitzvah, but to see the unity behind all the mitzvahs. Right? So this is why there are 10 statements, which means it's all one, but they break up into 10. And this is the reason why there are 10 plagues. As a matter of fact, the statement is the 10 plagues changed the 10 original statements of the creation of the world and made it into the 10 so-called commandments. What it really means is that the world had to recognize that God, who created the world, cares about the world, and he reacts to the actions of the world. What is it that proved to the world? At that time, Egypt is the world, because whatever Egypt believes, the world believes. Right? So Egypt had to believe that there is a God. How were they convinced that there is a God? They saw 10 plagues. This plague, this plague, this plague. So each plague separately said, hey, wait a second, that's witchcraft. No, 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 wait, this is something else. But when they saw everything together, they had no other choice but to declare God did it. They saw the one behind the 10. And because they believed it, the Jews started believing it. And finally, the Jews were able in Mount Sinai to recognize the one behind the 10. Okay? This is the idea of the 10 and the one. The holy letters, because it's part of the name of God, you mean? Yes, because the Yud represents a point where everything gets together to. The Yud, right? It's the smallest of the letters. And that represents the beginning of everything. And it does say that the Yud is the beginning, even in the name of God. And the second letter, Hey, represents the creation of God. So Yud is the beginning, and Hey is the rest of the creation that's representative of it. Now, let's go on. Let's skip now. We won't have time to go through all the statements, but let's skip to the fourth statement. Zachor et Yom HaShabbat leKadesho. Zachor. Now, you know that we have a second version of the 10 statements. We have a second version in the book of Deuteronomy. We have a second version. When Moshe Rabbeinu, before his death, was repeating all the events which he thought were worthwhile to repeat to the Jewish people before his death, he also repeats the receiving of the 10 statements of the Zachor. That obligates you to find the positive aspects of the Sabbath. Like, for instance, the special enjoyment of a Sabbath meal is a fulfillment of the remembrance of the Sabbath. The singing on the Sabbath songs is a special, that is Zachor et Yom HaShabbat. Making Kiddush on wine, that is Zachor et Yom HaShabbat. The question is, why Zachor, remember the Sabbath, was chosen in the first version of the so-called commandment, as opposed to Shamor, which is chosen in the second version? Because in reality, they were given together. What happened in the second version? So one of the great commentaries of ours says, well, because in the actual tablets, which word was written? Remember, the 10 statements were given orally, and 40 days later, they appeared on a stone, on two tablets of a stone, 40 days later. Which word appeared on the tablet itself? So he brings proof that Zachor was written on the first tablet, and the first tablet was immediately destroyed, right? 40 days after the receiving of the oral 10 statements, it was destroyed. The second tablet were given to the Jews later on, right? And then in Yom Kippur, and there it says Shamor. Why is that? Why didn't the second version keep the same word Zachor? So this commentary says the following, you see. The moment the Jews lost the first tablet, right, there was a major change in the spiritual level of the Jewish people, or the other way around. The fact that there was a major change by the Jews, that caused the breaking of the tablet. Right? Now, what was the problem with the Jewish people? The problem of the Jewish people was that they weren't able to maintain their spiritual level for too long. As a matter of fact, they were able to maintain their spiritual level. The after Sinai effect lasted for 39 days. But on the 40th day, it just collapsed. Collapsed. They just couldn't hold that level. So by some people, it meant worshiping the golden calf. By some people, it meant just not reacting strongly enough against the worship of the golden calf. But each one came down in his spiritual levels. They lost a little bit of that spiritual sensitivity that they acquired on Mount Sinai, right? Everybody went down a little bit. Now, the Sabbath, of course, is the most spiritual day. This origin of all holiness in time is the Sabbath, right? So, it says that on the Sabbath, if a person would really purify his soul, he can recreate for himself again the Sinai experience, or he can come as close as possible to the Sinai experience. And there is a statement in the Talmud, the Sinai experience was on the Sabbath, because the word Shabbat has in it the word Lashuv, return. You return to your own source, to your own roots, to the purity of your own soul. You can tune in to the purity of your own soul, and you can experience something which only your soul can experience. And according to our tradition, all Jewish souls were there in Sinai, which means that there is something about the Jewish soul which made it absorb the experience of Sinai, and it's still with us. That's what we believe, that every Jewish soul was there, we believe. Therefore, as long as we maintain that level, we can go back to Sinai, right? What about when we lost that level? So it's very, very difficult to go back to Sinai. Most we can do is just not allow our bodies, our physical parts, to be too much of a hindrance in our craving for returning to Sinai. Okay? So now, if so, after the destruction of the first tablets, after the breaking of the first tablets, the main job for us is fighting the physical, right? Before the destruction of the first tablet, our main job was maintaining the spiritual. Okay? So the job changes, right? Meaning it becomes much more difficult after the destruction of the first tablet to maintain your spiritual level. Therefore, the word Zachor means what? Remember, which means maintain the spiritual level. Remember the level. That was fitting for the Jews before the destruction of the first tablets. Once the first tablets were destroyed, our job became much more difficult. What is our goal from that point on? Guard, which means don't let your physical being destroy your spiritual aspirations. Okay? Therefore, make sure don't do this. So the stress, the focus is on the physical, on what not to do. But ideally, what not to do should be a natural outcome of what is to do. How can you go right or build or make a fire when spiritually you are back in Sinai? So of course it becomes like a natural outcome of Zachor. Unfortunately, once the first tablets were destroyed, it's not a natural outcome anymore. We have to focus on it, okay? Okay, let's go on. There's something else which we find a difference between the book of Exodus and Deuteronomy as far as the reason for the Sabbath. Now, this is let me point it out to you. Here it says in verse number 11 why we have to keep the Sabbath. Ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. You know why you have to keep the Sabbath? Because sheshet yamim asa Hashem. Because God created the world sheshet yamim, in 6 days. Now, just as an aside, you know what would be, we have to know a little bit Hebrew for this. You know what how you would say, how is it translated? Because what? In verse number 11? In 6 days. Where do you find in Hebrew the word in? It's not there. What should it have said if it means in 6 days? Be, you hear? It should say, ki be sheshet yamim asat Hashem et hashamayim. You hear? To be exact, should be besheshet yamim. How come it says ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem? So Rabbeinu Bechai, one of the very, very early commentaries, he says, you know what it's telling you here? If it would say, now it's very, very subtle, that God created the world in 6 days, it would imply that the 6 days are a given, right? And God created those, whatever he created, in 6 days. But that's not what we believe. Right? In other words, if I tell you, put something in the container, so the container is there. But God created the container together with what it contained. In other words, what did God create? Sheishet Yamin. He created 6 days. So you know how we have to read the verse here? Says Arinu B'chayim. God created, number one, the container, 6 days, because before that there was no time. Time is a creation. Here, this is a very important Torah concept. Time is as much a creation as everything else. Time and space were created, right? Where is it hinted here? Kisheshet Yamim Asashem. God created the 6 days, not in 6 days, right? This is what Rabbeinu Bechaya says. And here it says then that the reason for the Sabbath is that God rested on the Sabbath. What is the point? What's the importance of the fact that God rested on the Sabbath? Vayana Bayom Ashvi, because it implies, what does it imply when somebody rests? That he did something before. When we say we rest on the Sabbath, because God rested on the Sabbath. And why did God rest on the Sabbath? Because he created the world. So basically, by keeping the Sabbath, what are we declaring? God created the world. Okay? Fine. When if we turn to Deuteronomy, you'll find another reason, which on the surface has nothing to do with the Sabbath. And I'm reading now from chapter 5 of Deuteronomy, verse number 15, in the fifth statement, Veshamor et yom haShabbat, etc., etc. Vezacharta ki eved haita be'eretz Mitzrayim. You know why you have to keep the Sabbath? To remember that you were in Egypt. What does the Sabbath have to do with going out of Egypt? The Sabbath precedes Egypt. Right? As a matter of fact, we say it in Kiddush. Zecher litziat Mitzrayim. What does the Sabbath have to do with Mitzrayim? With going out of Egypt. Okay? So the commentaries say that there are two concepts of the Sabbath. Two things in the Sabbath. One thing is like what we said before, the fact that it is a testimony to our belief that God created the world. Right? God created everything. That's why we keep the Sabbath. But there's something else about the Sabbath. Sabbath has a very important effect on us, on ourselves. Why? Because when God created the world, God told Adam, be fruitful and multiply and fill the world and conquer the world. Vekibshuha. You, Adam, you human beings, you have to conquer the world. What does it mean to conquer the world? Obviously, it does not mean conquer each other. So what does it mean to conquer the world? It means to benefit from the world. Use the world for your benefit. Okay, so that's our obligation. It comes the Sabbath, and we have to abstain from conquering the world. You know, conquer the world in 6 days, and then abstain. Say the commentary. Why? Because very often, that job that you are doing of conquering the world, right, that makes you, for instance, grow bread, right, work, enjoy yourself, write, ride the car, or watch television, go to the beach. Those are all things which is part of the conquering of the world, benefiting from the world, right? What about if it comes a point that you say, what, I have to stop? I can't live without it. Right? You mean I can't grow bread today? How can I live without it? You mean I can't cook today? How can I eat fresh food? You know what you are declaring? That you are not conquering the world anymore. The world, nature has conquered you. You become a servant to nature. If you say, I can't live without it, you are declaring that you are becoming a servant. So you are going against the purpose. What is the constant reminder that we should remain masters of the world and not its servants? The fact that one day a week we can say, stop. We don't cook, we don't drive, we don't write, we don't do anything. We withdraw from the world. By withdrawing from the world, you are reestablishing your mastery of the world. Do you hear this? Therefore, the Jew has that special obligation to be the master and not to be a slave. What is the constant reminder not to be a slave? We went out of Egypt. We were slaves in Egypt, and once we left Egypt, slavery is gone forever. Because a person, in order to relate to God, must be free. Otherwise, you can't relate to God. What maintains your freedom? the Sabbath maintains your freedom. Therefore, every Sabbath is a reminder of the lesson of going out of Egypt. You are maintaining your freedom. That is the idea behind it. That's the second aspect of the Sabbath. Okay. Shabbat Shalom. Okay, well, let's do it. Okay. We don't have time to go into it. Okay.